When you're the speaker, you are the least important person in the room. I don't care if you're speaking to 10,000 people, you don't matter. Your message is all that matters, and that those people in that audience can hear your message and take something from it that then will have a ripple effect and allow them to make other people's lives better. You're just the channel for the message.
Hey, it's Zach here, and super quick before we dive into the show. If you haven't already, I want to make sure that you have subscribed to my free weekly Case of the Mondays newsletter, because it is where I share my best advice, strategies, and mindsets to help you design a creative career that you absolutely love showing up for every Monday morning. When you sign up, I'll even send you a bonus 5-day email course to help you clarify and prioritize the next small steps in your unique path to success. To sign up, just visit optimizeyourself.me/newsletter. All right, on to today's episode. My name is Zach Arnold, and I'm a former Hollywood film and television editor turned career strategist and the creator of Optimize Yourself, where I help artists, creatives, and storytellers just like you design the more balanced, more sustainable, and more fulfilling creative career that you deserve. In a nutshell, I'm Tim Ferriss meets Ted Lasso, minus the mustache, because I am obsessed with both learning everything I can about optimizing human potential while also inspiring you to realize yours. If you are ready to step outside your comfort zone, let's dive right in and unlock the optimized version of you. Hello, and welcome to the Optimize Yourself podcast, where I share honest and candid conversations with best-selling authors, world-class athletes, Hollywood legends, elite experts in a variety of fields, as well as everyday people that are achieving extraordinary things. It means the world to me that with all the podcast choices out there, you have chosen to invest your valuable time, energy, and attention with me. Now, before we get started, don't forget to visit optimizeyourself.me/podcast so you can subscribe, leave a review, and so you can also download your unique customized podcast playlist, where I'm going to send you the 5 best expert interviews from our archives to help you achieve your specific goals. So on that note, without further ado, let's get right to today's guest. I am here today with Bridget Sampson, who is a TEDx speaker, an author, a leadership coach, a retired professor, a mother of 2, and a podcaster, just to name a few. Something tells me we're going to talk a lot more about what it means to be a multi-hyphenate. However, I'm going to need to reserve the next 17 minutes just to talk about all of the things that you've done in your intro before we actually get started. So you, Bridget, are the founder and CEO of Sampson Coaching and Consulting, and you've been doing that for over 25 years. You teach the skills of communication, mindset, leadership, many more beyond that. You've done it for clients such as Google, Mattel, Capital Group, other nonprofit organizations, as well as 6 universities. And you're also the host of not 1 or 2, but 3 different podcasts: Growth and Gratitude, The Right Questions, and Transgender School. I'm already exhausted, and I haven't even thanked you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much, Zach. You've just made my day. That makes me feel really good. And I love that we both appreciate being a generalist and think that there's value in that as opposed to just having one thing, because I am excited and passionate about everything I do. So thank you for appreciating that and recognizing that and sharing that with me.
Yes. So you may not know, but this is actually a secret meeting of Overachievers Anonymous. I am the president, and I will be asking you to join us today. But in reading your opening bio and your profile, I can imagine you can relate to me, and that when you're in, whether it's a networking setting or just a personal setting, and somebody says, oh, what do you do? And you're like, oh boy, this is going to take a while, right? I still to this day don't know how to answer that question.
Same. I have about 50 different elevator pitches. And I don't like any of them. I'm constantly rewriting them. So yes.
Well, one of the areas that you do specialize, and we're going to talk more about the idea of generalization versus specialization, because I believe that underneath all the different things you do, there's one unique specialty. And my assumption is, based on your TEDx talk, is that it's probably about communication and public speaking.
Absolutely. Yes. I would say yes. And that goes for being a professor. When I was teaching public speaking courses, beginning and advanced. I've taught many, many powerful presentations and public speaking workshops in all the companies I've worked for. And I do lots of public speaking coaching. So you're 100% right. Thank you for reading between all the lines and seeing that if I had to pick one thing that's really my thing and that I really help people with, that would be at public speaking. Absolutely.
Which makes perfect sense, because you were naturally born a public speaker. It just came easy to you, right?
You are so funny. No, as I share in my TEDx talk, I was terrified of it, very traumatized by early public speaking experiences that did not go well. And it wasn't until I took my first college public speaking course, which again, terrified me, and I fell apart during my first speech, that I decided I can't let this ruin my life. I can't let this limit my career, my personal growth, my confidence in myself and what I have to offer the world. And so I decided at that point, it was my third year in college, not only to conquer it in that basic public speaking course, but then to become a communication studies major and make that my career. So it's pretty interesting how that did a 180 for sure.
Now, what I'm curious about is most people in that instance, if they were in college and they had this horrible public speaking experience, it's one and done. Nope, I'm never doing that again. What was it about you that instead decided I'm going to conquer this?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Zach. And I think looking back, what it really was is that once I finally got the coaching and support that I needed from my instructor, I realized it could be incredibly meaningful to talk about things that you care deeply about. And I know this is so cliche, but the last speech I gave in the class, this was a million years ago, was on recycling when it was kind of a new thing. And I was so excited that I got an A on it, and everyone in the class said they were going to start recycling. And I had proven it with all the research. And I had this amazing rush of, wow, this can actually really make a difference in people's lives. And I can have some influence to make the world a better place. And that's been what it's all about for me, whether it's my own public speaking or coaching. I've coached several folks now on their TEDx talks or big speeches that they're giving out in the world where they're really making a difference. And that's what it became about for me. I switched, by the way, from being a political science major because I always wanted to change the world and make the world a better place, to realizing maybe I can do that in a different way through studying communication.
So what I don't want to do is turn this into a diatribe on all the things that are broken about our education system. That could be not just an episode, that could be an entire podcast. And I'm sure there are many out there that are talking about how broken the education system is. But my theory, not being in the academic space, but having gone through the education system, is that our version of public speaking is introduced to us usually late elementary or sometime in middle school. And you have to get in front of the class and read from index cards and read a book report. This book was about Johnny, and Johnny's his mom didn't like him. And you're just like, why in the world would I want to get in front of people and embarrass myself talking about something I don't care about? And what you pointed out is that when it's expressing something that's meaningful to you, that has a positive impact, those are the raw materials that you can then build from. So what have you seen in learning so much about public speaking and actually teaching communication? Why has it gone so wrong for us up until this point? Why is everybody afraid of it?
I think you described it perfectly. And I have that experience. My first experience was sixth grade, and I had to give a book report in front of the class, and I was shaking, and I had index cards, and I dropped the index cards. And people, I don't think they were laughing at me, but I think it was one of those moments you see on TV where you are imagining that everyone's laughing at you as I'm trying to shuffle and pick them up. I think everybody's got some kind of experience like that, where the way we were introduced to it, I agree with you, was all wrong and for all the wrong reasons. And I have to help a lot of my coaching clients unlearn that and come around to, no. Here's something I always say. When you're the speaker, you are the least important person in the room. I don't care if you're speaking to 10,000 people, you don't matter. Your message is all that matters, and that those people in that audience can hear your message and take something from it that then will have a ripple effect and allow them to make other people's lives better. You're the least important person in the room. You're just the channel for the message. So being really nervous about it, making a big deal about it, being so worried about it is kind of self-centered if you think about it, right?
It's funny because there's what I've talked about with people, and I don't teach public speaking, but I teach communication, relationship building, networking, and as an editor and filmmaker for most of my adult life, we're communicators just in a slightly different art form. And it's a communication form where I get to sit in my small little dark room and nobody knows that I exist, and I get to share the message, but nobody knows who the messenger is, right? So I always talk about how the message is important, but the messenger is also important to a certain extent. But again, it really is ultimately about the message, right?
Yes.
So in saying that, what I want to better understand next, and we're going to go a lot deeper into how we can overcome some of these fears, why they're irrational. But I don't know if I'm going to get this statistic totally right. I'm probably paraphrasing it, but I know I'm not terribly far off. that if you go through all of the biggest fears that people have, my understanding is that public speaking statistically is a bigger fear than dying.
Yes.
Like dying is like number two or something, but public speaking is number one.
Yes.
This is so ridiculously and completely irrational. Yes. Have you, in all of your many years, do you understand why this is the case?
No, but well, let me think about that. But I love that Jerry Seinfeld long ago had a joke about that. If you've heard it, where he said that, so that means if you're at a funeral, you'd rather be in the casket than delivering the eulogy. Mm-hmm. Put it that way, it doesn't make any sense. But yes, I do know why it is. It's because as human beings, we are terrified of judgment. We're terrified of having eyes on us. It goes back to some primal fight, flight, freeze wiring in our brain. We don't want everybody's eyes on us because that means we're under threat. And that would have meant, you know, back in the cave days, you have lions who are staring you down and they're about to come and tear you to bits and eat you. But now what it is that the terror of having all the eyes on us is the fear of judgment and the fear of social ostracization, that people are not going to approve of me. I'm going to say something wrong. I'm going to be an outsider in the social group. And that triggers the actual fight or flight or freeze response so that we're terrified of it as if someone were holding a gun to our head. But in reality, the biggest fear we should have is that people are going to just forget everything we said and forget all about us, because that's way more likely.
Well, and you go through a whole host of different techniques. You've got an entire, you've literally written a book on communication skills and public speaking. And we'll, of course, make sure to have a link to your site and a link to your book. Thank and everything you. Else. What I don't want to do is go through chapter by chapter, point by point, because that's why you wrote the book.
Right.
But one of the things that you mentioned that I think is so important is that if you want the message to come through, and when the message comes through and it's meaningful to you, it takes off kind of some of the irrational fear of putting yourself in front of people. But exactly. That requires something that's called a point.
Yes.
Right? You need to collect your thoughts and have them be somewhat organized.
Yes, yes. So I'm big on, I have my little acronym is COD, content, organization, delivery. And they're all part of the puzzle and they're all incredibly important. So you've got to content, you've got to have a meaningful message. It's got to be something that you care about. When I used to teach speech, I taught public speaking courses for 28 years. And students would come to me and say things like, I'm going to give my informative speech on how to change a tire. And I would say, are you passionate about changing a tire? No, it just seems easy. That's not your topic. You're not doing it on that. You've got to talk about something that you care deeply about and you care about enough to be able to set aside your terror and your fears and anxieties enough, not entirely. It's okay and normal to be nervous, but to really care about speaking about this. And then yes, it has to be organized. I'm a big fan of having some key points, having an overall theme, having a message you want to come across. It really depends how much structure the person I'm working with is willing to put their talk into. I'm a big fan of lots of structure, and I've never been criticized for having too much structure. So I like having three key points. I like having an overall theme that's really clear. I like starting with an attention grabber that really draws people in. So I have my structure, my framework that I share and that people can take or leave the pieces that they want. And then delivery. You got to get rid of the ums. You've got to have a confident tone of voice. You have to learn how to use pauses and make eye contact and use your body. Your body is your tool when you're speaking. So absolutely, these are all pieces of the puzzle that need to come together to have a powerful talk.
I want to talk a little bit more about body and dynamics, because I think that especially for those that are probably listening like me, or at least the me of 10 years ago, before I decided, hey, let's start getting on stage and talking to people and let's start a podcast. It was my message has always been getting it out via a computer or via some other medium. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden getting in my head, well, it's all about the words. I've got to have all these words perfect and I've got to have it memorized, and thinking that, like you said, it's all about the message. So the words have to be perfect. How important are the actual words and phrases in our speech compared to delivery and all of the other attributes? You actually have this broken down into percentages.
You probably heard this before, right? That there was a professor Mehrabian who did a study and found that the words were only 7% of the impression. It's often misunderstood, but it's the impression that people are left with about you. The words are 7%. Where the exception to that is if the words are really shocking and striking, right? So right now I'm working with someone whose husband committed suicide. And I want to rephrase that because I said it the wrong way.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
right now I'm working with someone whose husband died by suicide, and she's working on her TED talk about that, right? And so her word, no one's going to forget that. That's those, the words are much more significant than 7% of the overall message in a talk like that. But most of the time, what we're saying is not that shocking, right? So people forget the words, but what they're left with, so Mehrabian said 7% is the words. And I believe it was about 55%. I'm going to round a little bit, but 55% body language. I'm not going to remember the statistics. I didn't look this up. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. You don't need to know them verbatim because, again, only 7% of this is relevant right now.
So. Only 7% are the words. And the rest of it is broken into body language and voice, your tone of voice, your pacing. Do you have fillers? Everything that is included in the way your voice comes across. So people spend way too much time worrying and stressing about the words and need to spend a lot more time practicing their delivery. Absolutely. This is proven.
Well, and the reason I bring this up, what I don't want to do is get too into the weeds of all the little nuances of how to create a presentation and the structure. Right. And that's, I want to make sure that we stay bigger picture. But the reason I wanted to go into the weeds here, it's way easier to have an energetic and passionate delivery when you actually care about what you're talking about.
That's right. That's right. If I had my way, I'd have a world where no one ever needs to do any kind of public speaking on a topic they don't care about. I've created my courses and my coaching and all the programs I have where we're only working with subject matter that the person is incredibly passionate about and most wants to put out into the world. I agree.
The concept that I just thought of that translates, I think, perfectly to the work that so many creatives do behind the scenes, so to speak, is the first speaking opportunity that I think I remember outside of high school, like in college, was I was asked to come back and speak at my alma mater about how I got a job in Los Angeles and how I made it in the industry. And I, at the time, I was a trailer editor and I was editing movie trailers. And somebody asked me, well, like, how do you edit a good trailer? And I had to think about it on the spot. And I said that if you think about the ultimate purpose of a movie trailer's job is to get you to buy tickets to go see the movie. That's the only reason that it exists. It's become its own art form in and of itself. But a lot of people listening today work on trailers, work in entertainment, work somewhere in some creative industry that's adjacent to that, right? And people are so hung up on what are all the story beats and do I know all the plot points? But what I always tell people is that nobody's going to remember what the movie was about from the trailer. All they're going to remember is how they felt for those 2.5 minutes. Mm. And they're going to buy a ticket because they want to feel that way for 100 minutes. If you can get them to feel the way you want them to feel for those 2.5 minutes, that's how you put butts in seats. And that's exactly what you're talking about, where it's not so much about all the little details or the order of the sentences, or we want to have structure. And again, we want to have a point. But if they walk away feeling something and they can only feel something if you feel something, now you've got something that they can hang on to.
That's right. I could not agree more. And that's why one of my favorite quotes is Maya Angelou. She says, people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. So I think that is very true for your world editing. And I want to say thank you, by the way. I'm a movie lover and the trailers are really important to me because I always watch the trailer before deciding which movie to watch. And it's, how does it make me feel? Is the investment of the 100 minutes going to evoke the feelings I want to experience? And I am very well aware that the editor is really the person or the editing team who makes the movie what it is.
Yeah. And I actually had an experience, the very first trailer that I ever cut. It was like less than 6 months after I had graduated from college. There was a movie that nobody at this company wanted to work on because it was not a good movie. And essentially I got my promotion because I was like, I'll do it. I'll cut it. And they're like, no, you don't understand. Like, this movie is so bad. I'm like, I don't care because the raw materials are there to create a great trailer to make people feel something. So I took it upon myself to work on this based mostly independently. I had a creative director that was helping me through it, but everybody was like, I don't want to touch this piece of crap, right? Uh-huh. But I knew there was an opportunity to make people feel something with it. So not only did I make people feel something with that trailer, I had somebody come up to me that I was talking to randomly at the gym one day. They said, oh, what do you do for a living? I'm edit movie trailers. Oh, give me an example of what you worked on. And I shared the name of the film. And immediately his demeanor changed. He's like, you owe me $15. Because I saw that trailer in the theater and I was like, this is going to be a great film. And it was crap. I'm like, yeah, I know it was a bad movie, but that's my job, is to make you feel something. And it was that feeling that got him in the room. Not only that, but that trailer ended up winning what's called a Golden Trailer Award for best trailer for worst movie. It's called the Golden Fleece. It's like the most coveted award in trailers because you took a horrible movie and you got people to show up for it. I say all that to emphasize how important that feeling is.
Yes. I could not agree more. And thanks for letting me know. So I'll know not to watch that film.
I'll send you what the film is. I don't want to say it publicly because who knows if somebody worked on it.
Right. But I know. But no, I could not agree more. And the same goes with public speaking. When we are putting, for those of you who are putting your work out into the world, even if it's just on social media, we know that it makes all the difference to choose the right clips, to have the right sound bites. And I'm constantly working. I've had to learn to become my own little amateur editor. And I take my own video clips and I just put them into iMovie and I edit things and I throw them on social media. And wow, you can really see the difference if you find the not just the right words, but how you make people feel with how you're saying what you're saying. The number of likes will shoot up dramatically. So these little efforts make a big difference.
So the reason that I want to emphasize so deeply that the way to overcome a lot of these fears is to find topics that you're passionate about, find something that's meaningful to you that will evoke that emotion in others, is that I think that in not just the entertainment industry, but in a multitude of industries, I think we're watching this. The word transformation has been used, realignment. Like there are a lot of industries that just kind of don't know what the hell is going on right now, whether it's with artificial intelligence or the economy. Like, I think everybody's in the state of what the hell is going on right now. And what I have found in talking to many experts in technology and the economy and finances and even in just entertainment, I firmly believe in anybody that's listened to the show every week, they're like, oh God, here we go again. I think we're going to see the transformation from a specialized society to a generalized society. And the multi-hyphenate generalists that have experience and skills and abilities in so many different areas, rather than going from just pick your lane and do one thing like everybody else, they're the ones that are going to rise to the top because they have options. And I know that you feel very similarly and that you too are very much a multi-hyphenate where on a single sheet of paper, you don't make a hell of a lot of sense. It's like, well, why didn't you just choose this one thing to be? But I think you found that you've been able to take advantage of that in a multitude of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you put it perfectly and I could not agree more. And I hope you're right about that because there are still a lot of folks out there making a strong case that we should have our one niche and we should go that way and then we'll be the expert in that area. But I've just never enjoyed that. I get bored with things. I love doing a little bit of everything. If somebody comes to me and says, can you coach? I've done weight loss coaching. I've done mindset coaching. I've done training. When people come to me, can you design a training program? And if it's going to be on anything personal growth or professional growth related, I'm passionate about it. So yeah, I hope that that is true. And it definitely feels true in my experience.
My sincerest apologies for the interruption, but if you're a creative professional who spends long hours at your workstation, not only is the following promo not an interruption, but listening has the potential to change your life. Because working with a topo mat underneath you at a height adjustable workstation is a game changer. Let's learn a little bit more from ErgoDriven co-founder and CEO Kit Perkins, creator of the TopoMat.
The TopoMat is the first anti-fatigue mat designed specifically for standing desks. The real benefit of a standing desk is movement. We found bringing in this cushioned terrain under your feet, your brain just subconsciously engages and you wander around and you get that movement at the standing desk that you need without even having to think about it at all.
People will come to me at an event or a panel and they'll say, I got the Topo mat because of you. Even when they had a mat, once they used this one, it was a total game changer.
We've just heard time and time again that with Topo, we've kind of hit the sweet spot, that it's the right premium quality materials and a right shape that people are actually getting benefit out of this stuff.
You spend more time here
easier than anywhere if you do creative work the way that I do. So I would rather be driving around in a Ferrari than a Ford Pinto. And I feel like this is the Ferrari of the standing mat.
One of the things you don't realize is that at a standing desk, your main interface to the world, your body's main interface to the world is the ground. If you're going to invest in anything at that Ferrari level, it should be what you're standing on.
Well, my goal is that for anybody that is a creative professional like myself that's stuck in front of a computer for inordinate amounts of time of their waking life, they're doing it standing on a topo mat. So you and I, my friend, one edit station at a time are going to change the world.
I like it. That's a utopian vision I can get on board with.
If you're a creative professional looking for a simple and affordable way to stay active, energetic, and focused while spending long hours at your height-adjustable workstation, I can't stress enough how important it is to have the right mat underneath you, which is why I continue to share the Topo Mat as my number one product recommendation. To learn more about the Topo Mat and purchase yours, visit optimizeyourself.me/topo. That's T-O-P-O.
And the reason that I want to dig into this deeper, all of this started with essentially the opening of your TEDx talk, which, like you said, it's an attention grabber, right? It wasn't just, hello, everybody, my name is Bridget, and I'd like to give you some statistics on why public speaking is important, right? You started with this idea of these gifts that we have. And what I want to do today is I want to help people understand, how do I identify the many gifts that I have so I can apply that gift and that passion to, and when I say public speaking, I don't mean getting on a stage in front of 100 people. It could be, but it could also be a podcast. It could also be a social media channel. It could also be a YouTube channel. It could be a newsletter. Those to me are forms of putting your ideas out into the world. But I've spoken to so many of my students where they're in this realignment period saying, I know I've got skills, but I could never be a teacher, or I could never be a consultant. I couldn't do that. But as we've talked about, you just need to have the passion and the purpose behind it. So yeah. I would like you to kind of give a brief summary of the way you open your TED talk. But more importantly, I want to help people understand how they identify what their gifts are so we can start to leverage them.
Thank you. You're asking me questions I've never been asked. So thank you for that.
And that's my goal.
Yes,
and you can ask Debbie at the end of every podcast, the response I want is, wow, that was really different than all the other episodes I've done. So that means that I'm achieving that so far.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. So how did I come up with the opening to my TEDx talk? Well, there was a lot of pressure on me to give the most amazing TEDx talk because I had been a public speaking instructor and coach for all these years, and I'm giving
a
TEDx
high bar.
Talk. Yeah, it was really anxiety producing. I didn't sleep at all the night before. It was really difficult, but that's a whole other story. Let me stay on track. I came up with the opening to my TEDx talk in just a moment of not thinking about it. And I'm a big believer in that. A lot of the gurus, as I'm sure you know, say you've got to have just time where you step away from your project and you do things for self-care. And I'm big on exercise and fun time and hiking and getting out in nature. And it was one of those moments of inspiration where I had the talk completely scripted, had rewritten it a million times. And it was just a moment of stepping away from it because I really worked on it for months before I gave it. So I wanted to have lots and lots of time. If we have the luxury of that, we don't always. Sometimes we have to turn things around really quickly. And it was just a moment completely stepping away from it. Oh, what if I opened with the attention grabber being about this idea that everybody has these unique gifts inside of them to give to the world, but if they never engage in any kind of public transmission of that gift that's inside them, it's going to stay inside them unopened as a gift. And so that's how it came about. And I played with it. I remember doing it with my kids and my husband over and over. And they were like, oh, it's a cool idea, but it's not working when you do it that way. And try this and say that. And with people who coached me. And and that's what I've gotten a lot of recognition for, was that opener, which I came back to at the end. So it was, I bookended it, but I really put a lot of pressure on myself to have a strong attention grabber, because that's a point I make in every course I teach on public speaking and in every coaching interaction, that you've got to start with a bang.
Well, since you started with the Seinfeld references, I'm going to continue go down the Seinfeld road. And that, I think you yada yada the best part, because you said, you know, I've got this public speech and I was up the entire night before with nerves, but that's another story. I'm like, no. I think
Can we edit that out?
The last thing we want to do is overlook this professional public speaker and communicator for a living that has a giant bundle of nerves, because guess what? So do all of us. So right. I actually want to dig deeper into that. It seems as somebody who's been doing this for so many years, that you would just naturally write your speech. You've got a draft. You do a couple of polishes. You stand on stage and you are a TEDx speaker. And it sounds like that's not the case at all. So it sounds like you're kind of like all of us.
I am so like all of you. And I've heard you say that, Zach. And that's what calmed my nerves about coming on your podcast today, because you said you're just like everybody else out there trying to figure things out, trying to grow, trying to learn. And that's me as well. And giving the TEDx talk was one of the most frightening experiences I've had in my entire life, because, and I don't want to discourage anyone from doing it. I think everybody has a TEDx talk, one or more in them. And I want to encourage you and I want to coach you to give yours. And at the same time, I would say you really have to be ready, and it's a whole different level, because once you give it, TED owns it. You cannot say I'm not happy with it, or I want to edit it myself, or I said something I didn't like. You give over the rights, much like when you have a book published or when you make a film, right? You have whatever it is, you give over the rights. And so there's a different level of pressure.
And I think that what you pointed out, and this is something that I talked about in a previous podcast, where a lot of times people that get to higher levels, the assumption is they have less imposter syndrome. And it's actually the inverse proportion, because the higher the expectations become, the more that there's imposter syndrome.
Yes.
So I would guess that for you to give any given lecture at CSUN or wherever, this is kind of business as usual. But now all of a sudden, you're on the red stage and it says TED behind you. And it's not just you're speaking for TED, it's you're a public speaker talking about public speaking for a public speaking organization. Massively high expectations, therefore imposter syndrome goes up and not down.
Thank you. Thank you for that empathy. Because because most of the time people say, oh, you taught public speaking for 25 years at a university before you did that. No, it doesn't matter. Each new experience with the volume turned up on the risk and what feels like is at stake, and the level at which you're putting yourself out there into the world. I'm not saying this to brag, but I think the TED Talk is up to about 350,000 views, and that's with no advertising whatsoever. So I knew that there was the potential for that. And knowing that in that moment of getting up on that stage is a lot.
And again, you knowing the importance of that message and the purpose that it has and the impact that it has, I'm guessing there's probably something to do with how you got through the nerves and actually showed up on stage and gave a great talk.
That's it. I kept telling myself the same message I tell the people I coach. I don't matter. It's not about me. This can really help people. And I go to those comments every once in a while and really to kind of fill myself up that, oh, okay, it really did help a lot of people. A lot of people were inspired to really work through their nervousness around the talks they have to give at work or putting themselves out there in a bigger way to get more recognition for their career and how they want to show up in the world. So it's been very rewarding.
Yeah. And I want to make one correction. I completely agree with you that it's not about you and it's about the people in the room. I disagree that you don't matter.
Yeah.
I definitely think that you matter. I think that, like you said, you're the least important person in the room, but it's not that you don't matter.
Yes.
But the reason that I say that, and this is a little bit of a tangent and we won't go too deep into it, but when I coach my students on resumes, on portfolio websites, on job interviews, I always have to help them with the mindset shift that this isn't about you. This is about them and their needs, and you're the solution to their problems. And once people make that mindset shift, it changes everything. It's the same mindset shift on stage or on your podcast or whatever. This isn't about me right now. This is about you, me extracting your story, because I think your story can inspire others and give them education for how they can then extract their stories and inspire others. But it doesn't mean that I don't matter. It just means that I'm the least important person on this call right now.
That's exactly right. And when I'm working with people, that's the opposite of what I want to convey. I always want to convey to each person that they matter so much, and that they have so much to give, and that they probably have gifts that they're not even aware of that I want to help them uncover. So I cannot agree with you more. That's a much better way to say it.
And that's what I want to dig into now, is helping me extract, and more importantly, helping everybody else listening to extract, why do I matter? What are the experiences that matter? How can I have impact with my past work experience, my life experiences, my skills, my passions, my unique knowledge in this one random subject that nobody's ever heard of? how can I actually figure out what it is that I want to or need to express? Because I've talked to so many people, there's nothing interesting about me. I'm just a normal person. It's like, everybody has a story. I've talked to hundreds of people. If you were to grab like my neighbor that I've never met ever, I've seen him once or twice, and you said to me in 5 minutes, you're doing a 90-minute podcast with him, I can all but guarantee it's going to be an engaging and interesting conversation because everybody has a story. But most people don't believe it. So how can we help people start to extract the gifts that they have? So once they at least see them, now they're motivated to actually express them.
Yeah. I think as a coach, I love to just start with, tell me about your life. Tell me your story. Who are you? What is the story of Zach? What is the story of Mary? And just let them talk. And I love to listen to people's stories. So if you tell me the story of your life, I'm going to be so engaged. I'm going to be nodding and asking, and then what happened? And then what did you do? I just went out to brunch with a new friend for the first time Sunday. And we talked for like 2 hours about her life. And if you were to look at her life on the surface, like what she does for her job, you would probably think nothing remarkable about that. And she has had some of the most incredible life experiences that she could give 20 TED Talks on different subjects. So I think, yeah, we have to mine for the gold. I think that's one of the gifts that we give as coaches. And I know you do as well. And just let people talk about their life. But I do think it's important. I want to reinforce what you said about that marriage between what we're passionate about and what we know about. I do think it's a requirement to have a good combination of both and a high degree of both, a significant degree of both. And that's why I picked public speaking for my TEDx talk, because I had been teaching it for so many years and I was passionate about it. I could have picked, as we are generalists, I could have picked from such a variety of topics, but it was really what ticks both boxes, experience and passion.
Right. So now you just triggered my imposter syndrome again, because now I'm thinking I have all these experiences, but I don't have an advanced degree in teaching it. So I'm out.
Like, you don't need a degree. No. Degree not required. Experience is not degree. The degree does not always equate to experience.
Yeah. They're two very different things, right? Life experience and book experience and scholarly knowledge are very, very, very different things.
Yes.
So the reason that I pointed that out is that I hear all the time, well, I don't have a coaching certification, or I don't have teaching certification, or I don't have a master's or a PhD. And what I always tell people is that ultimately, if you have the solution to their problems, nobody cares. As long as you know how to solve their problem, your experience is that you've solved it for yourself.
Yes, 100%.
So it's one thing to say, I'm super passionate about eating healthy, but I'm vastly overweight and I know nothing about diet. Well, that's a problem, right? That's where the idea of the message and the messenger can be a challenge is I know eating broccoli is good for you, but I've never eaten it in my life and I hate it and I have donuts for breakfast. Well, the messenger is going to matter even though the message is important, right? But I just want to make sure that when you say you need to check the box of passion and experience, it's not experience at a scholarly level where you have accredited degrees. Not that they're bad, but they're not necessary. Because I hear so many people get stuck on, well, I can't talk about this yet, or I can't teach it yet, or I can't build a business around this concept because I'm not ready. I don't have whatever the certifications are. Nobody cares.
No, I could not agree more. Some of the best speeches I've heard in my life were first year undergrads in my class, because they check those boxes. They pick something they knew about and something that they really cared about. You don't have to have any of those credentials. I could not agree more. And some of the best speakers out there have none of that.
Yeah, I agree. I can think of a host of TEDx speakers that would all be like, you know, the A-listers. And yeah, they've got degrees and they're, you know, consultants for big firms and they're New York Times bestselling authors. But then there are others that you just find kind of going through the TED, either the app or going through the YouTube channels. And you're like, who's this person? And 5 minutes in, you're like, this is fascinating. And they have none of those accreditations because, again, it's about their experience and their passion for sharing that message.
And with TEDx, keep in mind, the maximum time is 18 minutes. So my biggest problem as a coach is not that people don't have enough experience. It's how do you take all those years of experience and all that passion and whittle it down to an 18-minute talk?
Yeah, that's my challenge. Whenever I put together workshops for my community, I'm thinking, I don't know how long I can talk about this. And then all of a sudden, I'm 4.5 hours in. I'm like, dear Lord, how did I talk about how to write an email for 4.5 hours? That's not an exaggeration. I've literally talked about how to write a cold email for 4.5 hours.
I understand that. I could do the same.
Yeah. So, you and I are cut from the same cloth then.
Yeah.
So I want to break this down, and I really want to kind of start with a very small, manageable step. I've listened to this so far and I thought, you know what? I didn't think I could ever do this. I'm not the kind of person that could public speak, but maybe there's something here. How do I start to kind of find that first kernel, that first manageable step to maybe I can give this a try?
I would start with writing, with journaling, if that works for folks. Let me amend that. I would start with finding a way to get it out. So if you journal, just start writing about your story. You know, there's the idea of morning pages where people just get everything that's in their head out, or just some way of, even if it's 5 minutes a day, to just start writing and thinking about what's important to you, what matters to you, what interesting experiences have you had. But some people like recording things on their phone and memos, and some people like recording little video clips, whatever you like, but you've got to get out of you what's inside of you. And that's what's in your mind and your heart. What are the challenging experiences that you've had? How did you overcome them? What have your professional experiences been? Get it out, and then you can look at it and then do that mining and see what's there that could really benefit people that I could share.
And then from there, how do we get them to the point from it's just this endless list of a bunch of stuff to there it is. That's what I call the moment of inception. Any suggestions as a fellow coach to get people to that moment of inception of there's the kernel of the idea?
Of what the actual idea is. Yeah, you got to get it into one sentence. You got to get it into your, if you will, your value proposition. What is it? What is one sentence of what you have to give on this, right? So my TEDx talk is called How Public Speaking Will Change Your Life. It's not how to overcome anxiety about public speaking. It's not, right, how to organize the structure of a speech. It's if this is will change your life, right? So you've got to get it into some kind of language like that. What is the value proposition? And then I really advise people, if you've got multiple things to choose from, pick the one that is not the one that everybody's already talking about.
So give me an example of something everybody's talking about right now. And why I shouldn't express myself.
Well, you can do that. I mean, okay, here's what I really want to say. Have a twist on it that's different.
There we go. Now you're talking.
Right. So of course there are lots and lots of talks about public speaking, but I feel that my twist on it was different, that you're going to use it as a personal growth opportunity to change your life, to change everything in your life. That's my story of my TEDx talk and why I think it's successful for somebody who's not, you know, in the public eye at the level of the TEDx talks that have millions of views. So take that thing and figure out how you have a different message about it is what I mean to say. But I also do think if you're buried in a sea of voices talking about the same exact thing, and you have that topic to choose from versus something where you have a unique voice and there aren't a lot of voices, I would go with that. And I'll give you from my personal experience, my example is, as you know, I have a podcast and a whole educational program with my daughter called Transgender School. We have a way bigger audience for that than any of the audiences I have for any of the other work, the other podcasts I do. And I'm just very transparent about that and all the other work I do, because there are no other voices. There is not a single mother, daughter, mother, adult, transgender woman, daughter team out there talking about her coming out and the struggles we went through and the mistakes I made. And so we just have a much bigger audience and a much bigger following and much greater success because there was no other voice out there coming from the perspective we were and saying the things we were saying.
It's like you're looking at my notes, because that's exactly where I was going to go next. And what I was going to do is challenge your idea with your own idea, which is that I would argue that something that everybody's talking about in every realm, the political space, the comedic space, like just, you know, the general zeitgeist online, like transgender is a very, very common talking point. Everybody in some way, shape, or form is talking about it. What you did is you found something that everybody's talking about and you took your own unique perspective.
Right.
And not only that, but again, the ingredient is this is clearly something that you're passionate about. And it's also something that you're experienced in, even though your experience is not, I've written 7 scholarly dissertations and PhDs about this. It's I'm living this experience from the mother's perspective and talking about it from my daughter's perspective.
Exactly. You're right. Thank you for that clarification. You're right. It is certainly something that's being talked about a lot more today than when we started 3 years ago, but we have a take on it and a voice that I think isn't really out there.
Yeah. And I agree with that. And I applaud you for putting that out there. And the, especially given knowing your background about how just public speaking in general was something that you struggled with and even still frankly struggle with, even though you've chosen that to be your profession. So now let's just choose the most personal, most difficult thing I've probably ever been through. And that's what I'm going to talk about publicly. Like that requires a tremendous amount of courage. So I just wanted to point out my gratitude for the fact that you're doing that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I want to express my gratitude for my daughter, Jackie, who's now almost 27, because if she weren't willing to talk about it publicly, this wouldn't be happening. And it's very rare for people to want to do that, having been through everything that she's been through.
So I want to use this, if you're okay with it, to reverse engineer so people can better understand how can I take a lived experience and how can I express it? And again, it's not public speaking just on a stage, it's in the form of a podcast, but you're putting your ideas and your thoughts and your beliefs out into the world, hoping that it has a purpose and a positive impact on others. So take me back to whatever part of the story that you consider the beginning of this story, where it went from whether it's, you know, when you initially found out or you decided, well, I want to take this experience and I want to help others. You decide where the beginning of this story is. But for others that are going through some form of a lived experience, I want them to understand how you got from here's this thing that happened to now I want to express it.
I would start with the day she came out, which was in March of 2017. And an interesting note about that is that my TEDx talk on public speaking was just a little over a month later. So I have an article on Medium called Why I Gave the Wrong TEDx Talk, which is just it's not really what the article says, but I wanted it to be a catchy title because I was deep in shock and denial and depression and confusion about my 19-year-old telling me that I had been wrong about my own child being the gender I thought they were at 19. So it was just a month later that I gave my TEDx talk. So it was so surreal to know that I was internally going through one of the most challenging for me personally experiences I have ever been through, and no one knew. And here I was giving a TEDx talk about public speaking and about how the gifts inside you are your own experiences and your own knowledge and wisdom. But I did not have the hindsight and the having worked through and having come to a different place with this to be able to even consider talking about it until years later.
Yeah. So you were clearly in it at the moment. Right. Where it's so you can't see anything else. There's no perspective and you're just in it, unable to objectively step away and kind of see what's the meaning of this. Why am I going through it? It's just this thing that's happening to you.
Nothing.
Right.
No, no perspective.
A lot of people over the last few years in whatever shape or form it might take, a lot of people are in that same place of just the world just keeps happening to me. All of these things, all this flux, all this transition. I'm curious, at what point did it go from this is happening to me to all of a sudden there's just a little bit, doesn't have to be a this amazing introspection and aha moment, but at one point was it, I think that there's a kernel of something here beyond this is my own experience and I have to get through it.
It was probably somewhere between the 2 to 3 year mark after. And we started transgender school, which is an educational program. We have webinars and we have a variety of resources for people about 3 years, somewhere between 3 and 4 years after her coming out.
So it's this timeline of, you gave me the date. It was March something in 2017. I forgot the exact date, but
that's
March,
right,
of 2017. Right. So March 4th of 2017. And if I do the math, that means right around the time the world was falling apart is when you decided that you wanted to start a school for transgender people. Give or take 2020.
COVID. Yeah,
COVID.
Exactly. And if it weren't for COVID, which was tragic in multiple ways, but also provided some fascinating opportunities for some of us, that was part of the impetus. At home, and we're trying to figure out how to live life on Zoom. Maybe we should start a transgender school podcast. Yes, it was 2020.
So the part of the reason that I wanted to bring up this idea of you decided during COVID lockdowns that you wanted to share this story is that, number one, there was a part of you that I would guess, and I don't want to put words in your mouth or thoughts in your head, where it was a matter of, I don't care what's going on in the world. This is an important idea that I really believe needs to get out there. But as a public speaking coach and teacher, I can't go out and talk on stages. So let me find the opportunity in this massive disruption. That's kind of a common theme.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I had never done that really in a partnership with something so deeply personal. I had had employees and partnerships professionally with coaching and training, but to do that with my daughter was really a scary idea. So we talked about it a lot before we put anything out there, but you're exactly right. That's what it was.
So one of the themes that I'm kind of hearing from this is that you decided, you know, not that you decided to go through this experience, but this experience was thrust upon you in 2017. You've gone through the next few years of talking to whomever you need to better understand it. But then you decided, you know what, there's this tremendous opportunity amongst all this disruption. I have an idea, a purpose behind this idea that I think can help people, but I can't get on a stage, can't talk about it because the world is falling apart in front of me. And you didn't use that as a way to stop you or create an excuse. It was, let me figure out how to do it on Zoom instead. And I think that finding opportunity and disruption is a very relevant theme to what's going on even now. So talk to me a little bit more about the mindset of, let's do this no matter what it takes.
That's a great way to put it. I love the way you described it all. Yeah. So when the journey started in 2017, I could never have imagined that I would ever talk to anybody about it. Nobody knew for the longest time. So I went through a lot. I spent a lot of time in support group meetings and online groups and talking with a lot of other parents and working through things with my daughter, who helped me understand a lot. And I went through a period of denial and shock and a lot of emotional turmoil, where if you had said to me, oh, you know, you're going to end up talking about this all publicly in a few years, I would have said, you are insane. There's no way. I'll never be able to speak about this intelligently or confidently. And so fast forward, right, to COVID 3 years down the road, and we're all trying to figure out how to take my business online. I had been mostly a coach and a trainer in person. And my daughter and I just started having conversations about, we've learned so much over this three and a half years, whatever it was. And we really could help people. There are so many families experiencing their kids coming out as transgender or non-binary or gender fluid. And I had learned so much from all the professionals in the field and read books. And she had learned so much and built her community of people in the LGBTQ community. And so we just started having these conversations about, maybe we could put something out there in the world that could really help people. And she's an activist. She works in the world of politics, and she's always been very outspoken about the issues that she cares deeply about. She has no problem with public speaking. I used to bring her to my classes when she was a kid, my public speaking classes, and she would challenge the students not during their speeches, but in the Q&A. So she always had that very innately in her somehow, much more than I did when I was younger. So we just had a lot of conversations about how to maybe take advantage of the opportunity of being at home, start a podcast, start some webinars over Zoom, start building a community, and see what happened. And it grew from there.
I have spent almost 10 years now raving about how much I love my Topomat, and I have finally discovered what I now consider the Topomat of desk chairs, the Core 360. The Core 360, spelled Q-O-R, is designed to keep me constantly moving while seated in an upright and balanced position. To learn more about how it works, let's hear from Core 360 founder, Dr. Turner Osler, about why he created the Core 360 active sitting chair.
When you sit badly for many hours a day. And that's really what the problem is. It's very hard to make yourself get up and do jumping jacks every half hour. But if you just swap to a chair that requires you to be muscularly engaged in order not to fall off, it's an easy bar to clear.
For the procrastinators out there who hear all of the statistics and know how bad sitting is and it's the new smoking, and they're thinking, that's something I'll worry about in a few decades, you're gonna feel the effects of having more energy at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 4 o'clock in the afternoon that day.
And that's that's the whole point. Your core muscles will be stronger. You'll have less back pain. All of this will make you more available for the rest of the pursuits of your life, your kids, your hobbies, your whatever.
For those of us who need to practically live in front of computers to do our best creative work, the Core 360 is going to level up your game. Keep your body moving and keep the creativity flowing. To learn more and purchase what I consider to be the topo mat of desk chairs, please go to optimizeyourself.me/core360. That's optimizeyourself.me/QOR360.
What I want to dig into even deeper here that I think is so important and relevant to your work, but also helping everybody else listening to understand the value beyond, well, I have value I can bring to the world and I can create an impact. So what, right? Or maybe this is a way that I can share an idea and maybe I can make some money as a side hustle. What I've discovered for me personally, and I have a feeling you're going to be in the same camp, but I don't want to make any assumptions, which is why I'm asking. I've discovered that possibly the most valuable and impactful therapy that I've had for myself to work through problems is sharing them with other people. And I came to this realization. It was one of those like, duh moments when I was actually talking to another podcaster and they were talking about the value of a journaling process. And I said, I've tried journaling like 10 times. I've got a whole slew of journal notebooks, all the nice ones. You spend like $30, $40. Yes. I fill out 4 pages, then it goes on the shelf. To this day, I've still yet to crack that code, right? But then she said something really interesting. She said, don't you write a newsletter every week? I'm like, yeah. She's like, haven't you had like 250 conversations with people talking about life and this and that? I'm like, yeah. She's like, don't you post stuff on social media? I'm like, yeah. She's like, sounds to me like maybe that's your form of journaling. Boom. All of a sudden, it just occurred to me, holy crap, everybody that's listening now, you're all my therapists. And I would guess you experienced a lot of this going through this process.
That is so true. I cannot tell you how much I can't tell you how much everything you just said resonates with me, Zach. And it's really nice to hear that I'm not the only one with just shelves and shelves of journals with 4 pages filled out in them. Yes, this has been therapy, absolutely. And not only that, it's been family therapy. My daughter Jackie and I we just finished our 38th episode. We do one episode a month. And every single one, I can pretty much say it has helped me to go deeper into the healing work with her, within myself. And it's not, we don't talk about it that way. We're really, the conversations we're having are to inform and educate other people who are going through similar things and just share our story and bring on lots of amazing guests who have expertise in different aspects of what we're talking about. But yes, each episode, in a way, some part of it has been therapy for me. She'd probably say not for her. I wonder, she's a tough cookie. She is so solid in herself. I would take a fraction of her like confidence and solidness. If you watch us, you'll see the difference, but she would probably as well say that some of it has been therapeutic for her.
And again, kind of going along this idea of putting your thoughts, your experiences out into the world. The other thing that I've discovered, and this is just like, literally, I've turned this into a dual therapy session where you and I are, talking well beyond how you structure an outline for a public speech, right? Yeah. But what I have found is that there are so many areas of my life where I have challenges or struggles where I just assume must be something wrong with me because everybody else seems to have this figured out. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm willing to have the courage to say, anybody else out there feeling burned out right now? No, it's just me. All of a sudden, everybody comes out of the woodwork. Oh my God, it's me too. That was how all this started. For me, and I say this because again, this isn't about me. I'm the least important person in the room right now, but I share this story for your benefit and for everybody else. The reason I became a podcaster is because people were reaching out to me because I had achieved a pretty high level of success pretty quickly as a film and TV editor. Mm-hmm. And they'd want to talk to me about how I got this opportunity or how I cut these scenes or whatever, right? It's all about craft. Mm-hmm. And people would reach out and they'd say, I'd like to have you on my podcast. What would you like to talk about? I said, well, what I'd really love to talk about is like the conditions in our industry and the overwork and the fact that I'm burned out and trying to find a better way to be more healthy. And their response was, I just want to talk about your TV shows. Like, well, shit, somebody's got to say it. So there was this compulsion inside of me that's like, I need to put something, I just need to get it off my chest. And I figured mm-hmm. I'd get it mm-hmm. off my chest for a few episodes mm-hmm. and I'd mm-hmm. put it out there. And almost 10 years later, somehow still haven't gotten it all off my chest. But it was, number one, very therapeutic. But what I found is that there are so many other people that are struggling with similar challenges, but I didn't realize that until I put those ideas out there into the world. And my guess is you've discovered something similar.
Everything you're saying, I'm just nodding and nodding and going, how do you know this? How do you know this? Because you're speaking my language and my world. Absolutely. One of the things that I would say I'm probably known for is just being really honest and vulnerable about whatever I'm going through. I talk about it on all the podcasts. I share with clients. I mean, I feel like I'm pretty solid and very much able to provide a lot of value for people in terms of what they need, but I'm very open about the things that I struggle with. And I attract people who want that, who want a coach or a trainer or somebody who's willing to share their struggles as well. So on my current podcast, which is called the other transgender schools current, but I have a podcast called Growth and Gratitude, which really is my coaching podcast. You're right that I pick a different topic for each episode that really is based on kind of the struggles that I'm having and that I'm seeing a lot of my clients have, and that I feel we're having conversations around, and I can give some tips and tricks and ideas, but with true honesty and authenticity about how I'm struggling with it as well. And the more I do that, the more I see that it's of value to people. So on Growth and Gratitude, I put it on YouTube, and the highest number of YouTube views is on an episode called How to Be Kinder to Yourself. And really, it was just a week where I had coaching session after coaching session after coaching session, whatever I'm coaching the person on, public speaking, executive coaching, everybody was just so darn freaking hard on themselves. And I found myself saying that over and over. And I was being hard on myself. I was wondering in all these coaching sessions, am I doing the best job I can of helping these folks to be kinder to themselves? So that's often where the inspiration comes for my episodes of that podcast, which is my coaching podcast for the world, but really especially for my clients, because every episode is based on things that come up in coaching. So I think that's an example. I hope that's an example of what you're saying. Yes, therapeutic for me, hopefully therapeutic, not therapy. I don't want to suggest that I'm a therapist. I'm not, I'm a coach, but hopefully helpful for my clients in a way that they can get value outside of our coaching sessions and find that additional healing and learning and way of really deepening the work that we're doing in the coaching sessions on their own time.
I'm glad you brought up this very, very fine line of coach versus therapist, because this is a conversation that I have all the time, and I'm sure you do too, where I find that, and I use the term career strategist. If somebody wants to know, what is it that you focus on? I'm a career strategist. But unofficially, you know, underneath the surface, full disclaimer, I have no medical degrees, I have no psychology degrees, but unofficially, I'm also a career therapist. I have a feeling you experience a lot of the same issues, where it's really hard to talk about what can you do next and how do you move forwards if you don't spend a little bit of time in the past.
Yes, yes. And yes, I think there are important distinctions to make between coaching and therapy, but I do think coaching can be very therapeutic, to just use the word as an adjective, right? It can be very healing. And I don't see how we can be talking about what's going on for you now and the goals you have for the future without looking back at some of the things that have held you back and some of the mindsets and the messaging and maybe even some of what you absorbed growing up from people around you. We have to be able to look at that a little bit. But honestly, a lot of the people I coach are also in therapy. So there's overlap. They will bring to me what they're working on with their therapist, and they'll bring to their therapist what we're working on in coaching. And I think it's a world where we can see the value in all of these different helping professions.
Yeah, it's weird because I literally just had this conversation with my client right before I got on with you, talking about they're getting ready to work with a therapist and trying to understand how the two work together. Mm-hmm. And I said, we can workshop the same problem from different angles. Like, here's the challenge you're dealing with right now. I can help bring practical strategies and tactics to move you forwards. They're going to help you unpack where did these patterns come from in the first place, right? Same problem, different angles.
Yeah. And to help people understand what that really looks like, I feel like a lot of times where it comes up is the client will express a lot of emotion and start crying, or I can see that there's so much emotion around something. And I'll say, you know, do you want to talk about how you're feeling about this? Do you want to talk about how difficult this is and your emotion around this? Because I'm trained to do that and I'm happy to do that. And I love tears. I think we need to release our tears and I'm happy to hold a space for that. But a lot of times the clients will say to me, no, I can do that in therapy. I need you to help me figure out the plan. And I'm like, okay, I can do that too. I can do either. And yes, your therapist is going to be great to help you work through the emotion and maybe even, and definitely I stay away from trauma and addiction and all of that. And I know you do as well. That's the place for therapy. But so we can have these really upfront conversations about where to get the right kind of support in a given moment, and it can change.
Right. And the reason that I bring this up is that I want to talk a little bit more about this word that I think scares so many people, which is expertise. Mm. It becomes such a barrier. And I'm assuming you probably see this with your students and with your clients. They're like, well, I'm not an expert, so I can never give a TED talk on this. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think redefining expertise is so key. If you're doing the work to understand what are the gifts that I possibly have, what are the experiences, mm-hmm. the unique knowledge, my perspective on an idea that's out there, but my perspective is different or unique, but I have this barrier that I need to overcome of expertise. And I think that as you and I are talking, you and I have a very similar challenge, which is this fine line of veering from coaching into therapy. Mm-hmm. Now, one area where you and I are very, very different, you have a whole list of coaching certifications and coaching programs. I've got exactly zero, right? So what I bring to my coaching experience is all of the past experience in solving problems. And my clients come to me having the same problem that I had not so long ago. So I'm not an expert. But on that one problem, I'm an expert because I solved it for them. So I stay in my lane with, you've had that problem. I've solved that 27 times in my career. Let me share how I did it. Here are some frameworks or here are some tactics, right?
Exactly.
But I went through an immense amount of imposter syndrome when I made the transition from being a craftsperson for a living to being an entrepreneur and a coach, thinking, who the hell am I? Like, why would anybody ever pay me money to do this stuff if I'm not certified, if I'm not an expert? Like, nobody's going to be willing to do that, until I realized it's just about me, again, coming back to this theme of sharing my personal experience. Here's how I solve the problem. You might want to try this, but I'm not the world's expert on it. I've just been there before.
Exactly. And honestly, I only have two coaching certifications and I got them in the last 5 years, and I've been coaching for 30 years. So I was doing a ton of coaching before I had any kind of credential in coaching. Those actually came out of COVID, because I had to shift into a lot more coaching work before I was doing much more training. And so to do the coaching, I thought it would help to have the certifications, but I was always a coach. Exactly as you said, I knew I had areas of expertise based on my professional experience that I could bring to people as a coach. So I could not agree with that more. And a lot of what I learned in the coaching certifications just reinforced things I already knew.
Yeah. You probably like, yeah, I already do that. Oh, that's interesting. I haven't tried that, but yeah. I'm sure
you've had that experience. I mean, they were definitely valuable. I wouldn't dissuade people. If you want to do it and you have the means and you have the time, it's great. And I did learn some new things, but absolutely not necessary. Don't let that hold you back.
Yeah. And the reason I bring that up, this was another conversation I had recently with a longtime friend and colleague that reached out to me, because they're making this career transition and they were looking into coaching and they knew nothing about coaching. And they figured, I'll do the 6-month training certification program. And I said, that's great, but you have to think about, where are you uniquely able to solve somebody's problems now? Yes. So rather than, this is going to show me how to be a coach, it's, here's where I can be somebody's expert, and this will augment my ability to coach them.
Exactly. I agree with that completely. Yes.
So here's the reason that I bring this up. And I'm sure that you can attest to this a lot more than even I could, but there's a lot of stigma right now to the term life coach. And I'm sure you've heard this, especially over the last 3 or 4 years, now that everybody's moving businesses online, everybody's becoming an influencer, everybody's on TikTok and Instagram. So I want to get your take on the following statement. I'm just sharing the statement. I'm not sharing for or against, but the statement that I've heard shared numerous times is that life coaches are people that failed at life and therefore become coaches. Have you ever heard this before?
I think I may have heard that and I just would laugh at it and say, okay, that's somebody who just doesn't get it. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's
okay. How do we dig a little bit deeper into that? Because I think that beyond just the imposter syndrome and I need a certain level of expertise, there is very much a stigma around the term coach nowadays because everybody says, well, I can't figure out what to do with my life, so I'm going to become a coach.
Yeah. I am proud to say that I'm a life coach. And one of my certifications is with a school called the Life Coach School. And so I don't buy into that stigma at all. I just think some people understand it and some people don't understand it. And that's fine. While more and more people are making fun of it, more and more people are coming around to it. And my personal experience informs that tremendously because prior to 5 years ago, I would have laughed at life coaching. I would have said something like what you just said. I was a professor. I was a corporate trainer at Google, right? And I saw myself as an executive coach until I discovered the Life Coach School and it changed my life. I listened to the podcast. Every episode added tremendous value to my life. I joined their membership program and did coaching online with their coaches. I started coaching one-on-one with one of their coaches, completely changed my entire mindset around what life coaching is and what life coaches can offer. And I see it as one of the most valuable opportunities that anybody can have if they can afford it in the world today. And it just doesn't really bother me, the people who think that. If they'll hear me out, I'll have a lot to say and I'll have about, you know, a stack of books and a ton of podcast episodes that I think could change their mind. But people come around when they come around or never, and that's okay. I think there's plenty of life coaching work to go around and coaching work in different areas of expertise, such as the areas that you and I have, and plenty of people who recognize the value of it. That's how I choose to look at it.
Well, I appreciate that viewpoint. And one of the things you said that just shows that your level of humbleness is you said, I was a professor. You weren't just a professor. You were a professor emeritus. I said that correctly, by the way?
Yeah. Yes. Very nice. That just means retired, but keeping all your it means you did a lot of service and
exactly. My point is, at least according to your bio, you retired with 28 years of experience in an academic scholarly setting where you were considered the expert. So the reason I say that is that going from that transition to learning about life coaching, what was it about it that completely changed your life? Because I would imagine that for others, they could have a similar experience.
Yeah, it's just funny. It makes me laugh as you mentioned that, because when I think about a lot of my former colleagues who would just totally laugh and snub their nose, she's a life coach now, right? But yes, I am also professor emeritus, which means faculty and retaining all your privileges, which is, you know, means I did a lot of service and was recognized and won a lot of awards, basically. So I stumbled on the Life Coach School. I saw, I think, an ad on Facebook that spoke to me about weight loss. I wanted to lose weight and I started watching the videos and I started learning more about how the Life Coach School has a track that teaches you about weight loss. So I'm trained in helping people through weight loss and I wanted to lose weight and I wanted to be happier and I wanted to have a better relationship with my family members. And this Life Coach School had all these podcasts and all this content around things that I wanted to improve in my life. Yes, I was an expert in public speaking. Yes, I had already given a TEDx talk, but I still had problems with my husband and I still couldn't lose the weight I wanted to lose to get to where I wanted to be. And to be honest, I was drinking too much alcohol. I wasn't an alcoholic, but I was like, this doesn't feel good anymore as I'm getting older. I want to cut way back on this. So I did one-on-one coaching with life coaches on all of these things. And over time, it took time, it took work, it took a lot of rewiring of my brain. I got to a really new place, a much better place on all of those issues and more, built my business, grew my business, overcame a lot of self-doubt about how I could move into more coaching work and be a life coach myself. So it was having that personal experience, seeing the results. And I was coached by people who had no degree and I didn't care. I learned to not care. You don't have a degree, but you've figured out how to be able to only have 2 drinks a week in a social setting or none, or, you know, I want to learn how to do that.
So again, it comes back to the theme of they're not the world's expert, but they've solved the problem that I need to solve next. Therefore, they are my expert. And I share all of that for anybody that has this feeling of imposter syndrome or this feeling of I have to know all of it before I can start or be perfect or have all these accreditations or degrees. It comes back to, like you said, here's here's a problem that I need to solve, and somebody else solved it for me, but this is something that I now want to express to others. All right. So it's starting with this giant long laundry list of all the things that you've done as a generalist, bringing it down to your one specialization is communicating your experiences so you can help others through similar experiences.
Yes, exactly.
So figuring out where you or anybody else can be both a jack of all trades, but a master of one, that's the work that I want to do and the work that you also do just to be able to help people understand what are my gifts and how can I put them out into the world.
And what I think I find as I talk to more and more people is a lot of people are already doing it for free, right? A lot of people listening right now, you're helping people in your life in some way. You're coaching people informally. I have no doubt people are coming to you for advice about things. So just think about how you already have that ability. And so if you can reframe it in your mind as why, if I'm doing this for free and people are finding value and people ask for my advice on whatever this topic is, if you want to, you can build it into your career. You don't have to, but I believe everybody could in at least one way, if not many different ways.
I believe the industry term for what you just said is what I call a mic drop moment. That was the perfect summarization of today's conversation. So now we come to what I call the shameless self-promotion portion of the program. For those that are listening that want to learn more about the multitude of things that you have to offer, whether it's your book on public speaking, your TEDx talk, other resources, you as coaching, I could send them to 27 different URLs, but what's the best place to start if people want to learn more about you and connect with you?
The best place is my website, SampsonCoachingAndConsulting.com. And Sampson has a P in it, SampsonCoachingAndConsulting.com. That's the hub. Everything's there. You'll see all my services. You'll see the podcasts. You'll see ways to get in touch with me. Everything is right there. That's the best place to start. If you're interested in transgender school, transgender education, and broader LGBTQ education, which we do a lot of as well, go to transgenderschool.org.
Great. I'm glad that you mentioned that as well. I appreciate that. Well, this has been tremendously informative for me, and I hope that it was enjoyable for you as well. And I'm going to do my best to send as many people your way as possible. So thanks for taking the time today. I appreciate it.
It was so much fun to talk with you, Zach. I enjoyed our conversation a lot. I learned a lot from it, and you made me feel really, really good about what I do and the work that I get to put out into the world. So thank you so much for this conversation. It was really, really enjoyable, beneficial for me.
You're more than welcome. I'm also going to throw a thank you out to our mutual connection, my podcast producer, Debbie Germino, because we wouldn't be here today sharing these stories without her. So unofficially, thanks, Debbie.
She's wonderful. Thank you so much, Debbie. I so appreciate you and everything you shared with me. I'm so grateful for Debbie too. Thank you.
Thank you so much for investing both your time and energy listening to today's show. If you were inspired by this conversation, don't forget to subscribe in your podcast app of choice, and most importantly, leave a review, because that helps move the show to the top of iTunes and get our message out there to those who need it the most. Simply visit optimizeyourself.me/subscribe to never miss another episode. Lastly, stay safe, healthy, sane, and most importantly, be well. One last thing before I lose you. If you haven't already, I want to make sure that you've subscribed to my free weekly Case of the Mondays newsletter, because it is where I share my best advice, strategies, and mindsets to help you design a creative career that you absolutely love showing up for every Monday morning. When you sign up, I'm even going to send you a bonus 5-day email course to help you clarify and prioritize the next small steps in your unique path to success. To sign up, just visit optimizeyourself.me/newsletter, and I will see you in your inbox.